Happy New Year and possibly the end of the world. So I brought the plague doctor to help us out with the pending apocalypse. It's the first episode ever of Security Weekly News, I guess. And I am your host, Doug White. So this is an all new year, an all new set of weirdness. And the FCC did let me back on the air. So we're going to have malware exploits and fun here on Security Weekly Network. And I think we're just about ready to go. We'll have Jason commenting today on the pending apocalypse. I'm going to talk about ransomware, TikTok, World War III, and who knows what else. So Jason Wood from Paladin Security will join us on about the Iranian cyber threat, practical advice for security professionals in the expert commentary segment today. So stick around for this episode of Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week, your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News. Make sure your team is prepared to fight off the latest cybersecurity threat. IT Pro TV is the resource to keep you and your IT team skills up to date. You can stream IT Pro TV courses live and on demand, so there's no need to send staff to off-site training. Team subscriptions include Pro Portal, so managers have full control over your team's training schedule. Go to itpro.tv/hack-naked and use the code HN30 to try it free for 7 days and receive 30% off your monthly membership.
Welcome to Security Weekly News. I'm your host, Doug White. But before the show, we want to make a couple of quick announcements for you. Our next webcast is January 15th with Cecilia Mariner, RSAC Program Director, Innovation and Scholars, where we will discuss RSAC Sandbox, RSAC Innovation Sandbox, RSAC Launchpad, RSAC Security Scholar, and their how-to seminar for innovators and entrepreneurs. Be sure and register for our upcoming webcast by visiting securityweekly.com and selecting the webcast drop-down from the top menu bar and clicking registration. Well, let's get to some news for the week. All right. So I thought I'd start this week off talking about a couple of takedowns that happened. My number one takedown of the week was Travelex. So Travelex, if you are unfamiliar, is a foreign currency exchange and management program that a lot of banks use. If you've been traveling in Europe, if you've been in an airport and you've seen those little kiosk kind of thing, that's where you actually go and you trade euros for, you know, I don't know, kroner or whatever you're trying to trade for. Their website was taken down on New Year's Eve, and supposedly it's, as of this morning anyway, it was still down. And there was a lot of debate about how long it would be down, what they were going to do. This, of course, has suspended online trading in a lot of foreign currency exchange for people holding cards. So that was a pretty grim start to the new year for them. And if you're trying to access your travel funds, well, you've got a bit of a problem, although they do have some solutions on their site, which basically say to go into the store and cash out. At this point, Barclays, HSBC, and a lot of other banks are still wondering how they're going to manage this back end piece of the system for that. This type of problem seems to have occurred from, well, you guessed it, some sort of ransomware. They called it a software virus on New Year's Eve, did not announce what it was, but they did say that no data from the Travelex site had actually been compromised. But did this result from the Pulse Secure VPN exploit being used to create a ransomware attack? So there was speculation from another article that indeed this attack may have been the result of a Pulse Secure flaw, which is CVE 2019-1150, that was used to deliver this ransomware to them. There was a patch for this flaw that was released early last year, but we all know how those patch management processes drag on, especially in financials, where they have to be very, very careful about what they do. I did put up links to all the CVE data and to these various articles on the wiki, so you can check that out if you want to read more about it. This particular Pulse VPN flaw is a remote code execution that is involves a Windows font library. And well, you know, once you can execute remote code, pretty much the next step is to, well, maybe get some data, but they say nobody got any data. But then, of course, the final step in that whole exciting process is to ransomware the site, which apparently is what has happened, and they've still not been able to recover from that. As we reported last year, and we'll likely be reporting for the foreseeable future with that segue, ransomware is still, of course, rampant. Basically, regardless of where you go or what you look at, you see endless stories about people being ransomware, even into your own personal experience. I got a call last week from somebody who basically said they worked for X, and it was a public thing. And they basically said, what does it mean when all the screens say, you have been ransomware, you need to send X number of Bitcoin, is that what this is called, to this wallet. And does that mean we can get back online if we pay them? And I was like, well, good luck with that. The story, the first up story on that, the section was eHealth Saskatchewan. Their user system was taken down by ransomware. They are still down as far as anybody knows. My point with this was, I don't know how many viewers we have in Saskatchewan, but hi there if you're out in the Great Plains. But basically, as we see more and more services oriented into this that involve users and end users, the criticality of things being ransomware becomes even more so. You know, used to when you wanted a doctor's appointment or you wanted to check in, you went to a clipboard or you made a phone call. Today, if you make a phone call, at least to my doctor's office, they immediately tell you to go to their website and use their user services option to create your own appointment. That's the only way you can create an appointment at my doctor's office. And if that's down, then I don't even know if they can figure out what's going on. So you're going to keep seeing this. Financials and healthcare have been heavily targeted for years by ransomware. They are still heavily targeted by ransomware. Any industry that is urgent where they have things there are going to always be a target for this, because the more urgent things are, the more likely it is that somebody's going to come directly after you with that sort of thing. So they said they detected it immediately, but my experience with ransomware is that you always detect it immediately, because as soon as it's encrypted everything, it pops up notes on all the screens all over your industry, all over your company. It does not take very long. They were still offline as of this morning. I mean, we could continue reporting all these kind of things. Sort of interesting ransomware story for me in that same light was Maze. So Maze ransomware has been being distributed for a while, since early last year. A company called Southwire, which is based in Georgia, got hit with Maze, and they had something like 878 screens that were being affected by this. And they decided, in the wake of all this retail ransomware, that maybe they would sue. So they decided to file a civil lawsuit against Maze ransomware, and they filed it naming John Doe, because nobody knows exactly who Maze ransomware actually is. But they filed it anyway. So they filed because they were having a demand of $6 million in ransom. You can read the article if you want to get all the grim details about that. To me, the interesting thing was that they filed a civil lawsuit under the CFAA. I don't know that this is going to get them any money anytime soon, but they basically took this a step further to the part that I think is particularly interesting. They named in their lawsuit not just John Doe of Maze, but they also named World Hosting Farm Limited. And World Hosting Farm Limited is the site server that is hosting the website that the attackers were using to distribute Maze ransomware. So this is probably going to be an interesting lawsuit to keep up with if you follow such things. Will it stop ransomware? Of course not. But is it going to, you know, actually attempt to put something back onto the people who developed it and or the people who host sites like this? Maybe so. So if you're a hosting service, you may want to, you know, get your legal people to take a look at that and see. Obviously, we could continue talking about ransomware all day long, because basically it's just a massive threat. If you call and ask today, you'll find, of course, the FBI telling you that spear phishing and, of course, ransomware that results in it being the number one thing. So basically, all these ransomware frameworks are out there right now. That is becoming the standard that I've observed. is that ransomware is now transitioning into retail frameworks where you can purchase customized ransomware targeted at whomever you want to target, have that assembled by someone, and then they deliver it for you. So they're really trying to completely automate that ransomware process and get out there in the marketplace, and you pay them for the ransomware, then you collect whatever ransom you can collect or whatever your purpose for the ransomware was. So please check out those backups and make sure that you're protected from this, okay? Because what I keep seeing, and when people keep calling me about ransomware, my first question is, are your backups safe? And of course, in this recent call, the answer to that question was, if they're on a backup server and it got ransomware, are the backups safe? And the answer is, well, probably not, and you can't get to them anyway. So, you know, that's an organization that may well have some serious problems. Another article that came up to me was in relation to credential stuffing, in relation to unsecure public cloud information. Was about making this the year that you commit yourself to securing your AWS S3 buckets or any other buckets that you may have in the cloud. I get calls about this all the time. I saw articles about this week, people talking about unsecured AWS S3 buckets. Obviously, the easiest setting on AWS S3 or AWS S3 buckets is public. If you set those buckets public, well, you know, we all have that guilty pleasure of saying, I just want to dump some stuff up there and leave it wide open so somebody else can download it. Well, that's cool. And if that's what you want and you don't care, then fine. But guess what? Scrapers and cloud hunters are out there looking for all those open bit buckets because people forget. They set them up initially and say, I'm just going to dump these pictures of my great grandmother on there to share with my family. And then 2 years later, they're putting their financial information in those same bit buckets and they've forgotten to clean that up. Companies do the exact same thing. You really probably want to take some kind of proactive approach at this point if you don't want to have a bunch of cloud leakage starting to affect you in a pretty grim way, which often has been leading, in addition to credential stuffing problems, because people were dumping everything into these bit buckets, which is really scary if you think about it. But people do that all the time. And if you go out there and look for them, you'll find all sorts of things. I posted a couple of articles about the signs of cloud data leakage, about how to secure your bit buckets. There's a little bit of an older article about S3 security, but it's still a very reasonable approach to starting to secure your bit buckets. Basically, it takes a policy, it takes an effort, and it takes some upkeep hours dedicated to that. If you're going to use cloud-based storage, you're going to use cloud-based services, you're going to have to get this commitment at some point in time, or everybody who is watching is going to eventually see this stuff sitting on the public bench, and someone's going to pick it up, and they're going to read it, and then, well, then you're done. Hashtag World War III. In a little bit, Jason Wood's going to talk about his views on some of this stuff that's going on right now. We've got people launching aircraft. So if you've been in a cave, which maybe is not a bad place to be, over the weekend, there was a lot of discussion about the hashtag World War III, which was trending very heavily. I'm not going to get into the politics of it. Probably you already know about it. I don't really care about the physical stuff. Well, I care about it, but I'm not going to get into it on this show. But my question in this section was, will the next war be fought with Hellfire missiles or in the cyberspace? My answer to that question, of course, is probably a little bit of both. But there is a heavy tendency, seems like these days, to start leaning towards this cyberspace, cyber war. And in this particular case, there were Twitter shots being fired at the same time real missiles were being fired. Almost immediately on the heels of all this activity, a website for the Federal Depository Library Program, one of the most exciting federal programs you could possibly look for, was defaced with a statement in Farsi, which, if you don't know, is the language spoken in Iran, and a political statement about the President of the United States. That defacement, I think, really heavily underscores the issue that we face with a lot of our assets and infrastructure all over the world, especially in lesser known agencies. For the last, you know, I don't know, X years, we've seen targets at things like the FBI, but we have not seen as many targets until the last 4 or 5 years of things like, you know, the San Jose police department. But today, attackers have realized that they have to go around the big giant glowing wall. And so there's these big giant glowing walls lined with razor wire sitting in front of really popular high profile things. But if you go around behind the wall, there's a little door on the side that says staff only that you can walk right through because it doesn't even have a lock on it. And that's kind of what you're seeing right now. The story was picked up, of course, by just about everybody from the Washington Post on down. CISA had released statements about this. I put on the wiki about Iran and the malicious Mamalicious? Ooh, I don't know what that means. The malicious cyber activity focused on the United States all the way back in June of last year. And of course, we all know that there's been malicious cyber activity back and forth between the United States and Iran way back. All the way back into the Stuxnet days when somebody on this side of the Atlantic in the Northern Hemisphere launched a virus called Stuxnet to destroy centrifuges in the Iranian nuclear program. It was one of the first real high profile blows in cyber warfare. But basically, CISA said, you need defense. And of course, what else can they say? But these guys have been, the U.S. and Iran have been partying in this cyberspace for a while now. And even, Stuxnet was back in 2015. You've still been seeing this stuff go back and forth. Not all of it gets a lot of press. Some of it's too esoteric. Some of it's just, we don't even know. None of us probably know exactly what it is. I did put links to all that stuff on there. Unlike hot war, this kind of cold war activity can be conducted without a lot of risk because even a small country can commit resources to cyber attacks and encourage us. You don't have to be China or Iran. So countries like North Korea or even, really, really small and really poor countries can actually ramp up in this arena and start attacking people like that. I even put up a piece of testimony back in the from the United States House in 2013 where they were actually hearing testimony where something called Cyber Pearl Harbor was being introduced. And they said that that within the next 10 years or so, you were going to see a Cyber Pearl Harbor in the United States. So is World War III hashtag this weekend going to be the beginning of the Cyber Pearl Harbor on some side? Well, who knows? But Iran did spend a lot of effort developing cyber way back in the 2015s and the 10s. They have their own YouTube service called Mare. I don't know how to pronounce that. They have their own parallel internet and so on. And you've been seeing that more and more with Russia, with China. They've all got parallel internets, their own versions of this. So again, basically means that all your efforts to secure need to really be ramped up. That's the general advice right now from MSISEC and everybody else in that cyber arena. That kind of leads down then to us to talk about what is coming up. So, and one other thing about that, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York City, of Giuliani Partners, a cybersecurity consulting firm, and again, no politics, is apparently the current advisor to the president on cyber affairs. So the former cybersecurity czar was removed, and Rudy Giuliani, a lawyer from New York is now the cyber czar protecting the United States. I, if you think that's great, that's cool. Enough said about that. But another story for this week, the continuing horror of passwords. We'll get back to this thing about World War III in a minute with Jason. The continuing horror of passwords. I told you we could talk a little bit about credential stuffing. Most people don't use good passwords. Most people use the same password and username across the entire spectrum of the cyber world. I see that all the time. And again, in the same light of going in through the side door, which is something all the people who are in the hacking realm have been doing since day one. Basically, there was an article on this week about how a lot of these big breaches this last year would have been prevented if we just did not use passwords. So if you want to read a little more about that, all these breaches are typically caused today by this cross-site pollution or credential stuffing attacks, where basically the fact that you used your password username combo for MrSloppy.com on your work account at the same time and all that stuff allows such escalation. We're not going to stop credential stuffing anytime soon as long as we still use passwords and as long as we don't use multi-factor. So please educate your users about that. At that point in time, I did want to mention one other thing. I'm going to try. I know Jason's over there. Jason, I can see him. He keeps leaning forward like, I want to talk, Doug. Let me talk. Please let me talk. I will. You know me. A couple other things. I did see a juicy story today about WebAssembly. I see stuff about Assembly, and I go, oh, yes, Assembly. WebAssembly, if you aren't familiar with it, is a mechanism to write bytecoded websites and run them essentially in Assembly to generate web pages on the fly. And this article was a study that not very many people were using this approach. It typically was being used for Bitcoin miners and for other various nefarious activities and gaming. So as you might expect, not a lot of people have adopted this, what is called WASM or WASM WebAssembly tool, which was a joint project from all the browser companies to try and create new mechanisms to do this and maybe get away from things like JavaScript. But, you know, maybe someday, who knows, we'll get there. And one more, and then I promise I'll let Jason talk. He's used to me. TikTok. So everybody under the age of 20 uses it. A lot of people over the age of 20 use it. It's one of the biggest social media things out here today. The U.S. Army banned it. It is very popular with people all over the place to make small videos. It's kind of a derivative of Vine. And if you haven't seen a TikTok video, well, again, maybe you're already in the cave waiting on the end. But TikTok, of course, just happens to have been manufactured, supported, and delivered from a hostile foreign power, the People's Republic of China. And the army became convinced that maybe, just maybe, it was a bad idea to let the troops use this tool where they could film aspects of their everyday life. There's been all sorts of accusations against TikTok in all sorts of directions. There were concerns that TikTok was being scraped, of course, by the Chinese government and who knows else, but that it was also being used as a platform for propaganda by China, and that it was also being filtered by China so that they weren't allowing content on TikTok that might actually bring any sort of negative publicity towards the People's Republic of China. TikTok's been gaining ground on Facebook, approaching that 1 billion user mark very quickly. Bad news for our government and trying to ban these kind of social media is they're hydras. You chop one head off and seven more heads are going to take its place. It's really, really tough to get people off social media with bans, but they're trying. The latest Tech Republic study showed that the top three social media sites of the 2019 were TikTok, Google, and Twitter, that they were dominating this. So TikTok is really going to be a thing. So I promise you that now you would get to hear from Jason Wood.
As technology continues to evolve and expand, so have the countless ways our critical systems can be put in jeopardy. Ransomware attacks, misconfiguration, user error, and malicious threat actors, to name a few. As IT infrastructures continue to grow and diversify, how do you ensure stable security? Core Security, a help systems company, provides an analytics-driven, layered approach to security with a portfolio that enables both proactive and reactive responses. With Core Security, you can reduce risk by limiting access, detect upcoming and active threats, test for security weaknesses, and efficiently monitor data for actionable insights. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/core security.
We can now turn to the infamous, famous, and ever-present Jason Wood, where he's finally going to get to talk about the hashtag World War III stuff. So, Jason, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's good to be here. It was kind of funny watching you hint at me coming along.
It's a teaser, man. Come on.
It is. So, like Doug said, everybody, if you hadn't heard already, just so you knew, the United States killed an Iranian general last Friday. And since then, everybody is freaking out online. And when I mean everybody, I mean people and news organizations, about what Iran is going to do in response. And I think my favorite headline was from The Express, newspaper, a news site in the UK, which was, and I quote, World War III. Is World War III official? Will World War III happen? And will the UK get involved? Close quote. And to tell you how good their research on this topic was, they said in the first paragraph that the attack occurred in Iran, and then later said it happened at the Baghdad airport, which last I checked was still in Iraq. So they were obviously in a hurry to write this thing. even without that level of hysteria, there are a lot of people concerned about what Iran's next move is going to be. And in our field, of course, we are concerned about cyber attacks coming back from Iran against the United States and against our systems. And a lot of people are really kind of on edge about this. What is going to happen? Is it going to impact them? So let's talk about some preparation for any attacks that may occur, regardless of whether or not Iran is behind them or somebody else. Now, in the show notes, as I was preparing for this, and I found an article or blog by a gentleman named Rick Holland on the Digital Shadows blog. I've got the link to that here in the show notes on the wiki. And his analysis was focused on threat modeling mostly. But my point of view, and my point of view is a little bit more on the day-to-day operations as we're monitoring our environments. But he made a lot of really good points that fit pretty well into what I was thinking. So I cited that here. He made the point that now is not the time to freak out and go, oh my goodness, cyber Iran is going to come kill us all. And I agree with him. Yes, the tension between the United States and Iran is at a very high level and got elevated sharply on Friday. Yes, the Iranians have been busy conducting operations, cyber operations, for years. And as Doug said, they have spent quite a bit of time developing that capability. And we can add on to that that they're now angry and upset at us, or at least those of us here in the United States. At the same time, for those of us monitoring or securing, protecting an environment, what really changed between January 2nd and January 3rd? And the answer is probably not a lot. I mean, yes, we're going to see a spike in, you know, immediately of maybe lesser skilled attackers trying to cause things like the defacement that Doug cited on the, was it the Federal Library Depository Program website? And so we'll see that sort of thing, you know, is happening already. And yes, we can expect that Iran is going to respond at some point. But our networks have been plugged into this hostile environment that we call the internet for years. And they've been being attacked for years by people of varying skill levels. So we should already have some fairly comprehensive defenses in place for the types of actions that Iran or other groups may take against us. And if you are curious about what those might be, you can take a look at MITRE's attack framework. They've got notes on APT 33 or Refined Kitten, depending on which naming convention you use, which is one of Iran's groups, and they've got some other groups linked there. But they use things like that we've never heard of before, like spear phishing, brute force attacks, password spraying, distributed denial of service. They'll go after unpatched systems, things that we've been saying really for years already. So we should have defenses in place for all this. Those types of attacks are not limited to Iranian groups. They're used by the Chinese, the Russians, the Americans, anybody else. Or you can list out countries or groups pretty much endlessly about who uses those techniques. So what do we really need to do? Well, there shouldn't be too much that we should need to implement because we should already have it in place. Now, if you don't have defenses in place for things like that, then you obviously have some bigger problems than what Iran is going to do. But in times like this where we have some greater tension, we may decide that it is important for us to be more attentive to our monitoring. And certainly that is going to be the case. I mean, if as we follow things on the news, every time there is a geopolitical spat, we end up worrying about, you know, what are the Russians going to do in response? What are the Chinese going to do? Whatever this group is going to do in response to this. And maybe we do want to be more attentive, particularly if we are working for organizations or in organizations that are known to be targets for these types of groups. So for the Iranians, for example, if we were particularly concerned about them or other nation states, you know, that might be things like financial services, ICS, operations, defense, government, things like that. Those are obviously going to come into play. So if you're in those organizations, you know, you should have defenses for this stuff already, and you may decide as we raise our awareness and attentiveness to what's going on, let's start doing some hunts looking for the type of techniques that are occurring, that are known to occur by this this threat actor or these types of threat actors, and let's look for those inside of our environment. So you could go down that path and start, you know, doing some digging, trying to catch them early on. Now, this would be very early on, probably for a fairly well-planned group. They're going to spend some time getting ready for this, but still, we can start looking, but we need to keep looking for an extended period of time. Other organizations, you know, they may decide that we've already got monitoring in place, but we haven't been paying too much attention to our email and text notifications and things like that. So maybe we'll ramp up and pay a little bit more attention to that. That's always a good idea and should be doing that anyhow, even though it is sometimes a little boring as you're looking through this stuff and saying, yeah, that wasn't anything. So you want to do some tuning on your false positives. And finally, I hope at least there's a group of companies out there that will take this as a reminder that they need to look at their logs for the first time in months. So, you know, we should be stepping it up a little bit in our responsiveness to the events that are going on. Being a threat hunter, I'm an advocate, obviously, of looking for that type of activity. So that's one of the things that we can do. But honestly, beyond that, you know, need to just stay focused on the operational basics. Yes, we have some concerns about how Iran will respond to this or how, but we will always have concerns about how a country or group is going to respond to something that happens out there in the world. So stay focused on those operational basics. Make sure that we're getting patches deployed, as Doug talked about in the first story. We need to get those out there in a timely manner. It shouldn't be a year later. Make sure that unexpected services aren't hanging out on the internet waiting for attack. Make sure you've changed default passwords to something other than admin or password. Watch for password spraying attacks. Maybe spend some time, remind your users about phishing, and make sure that you have a pretty good phishing education program already implemented and going on inside your environment. And also, you probably ought to check your backups and make sure that they're working as expected. And it's always a good idea to actually do a test restore and see if they work. It's one thing to have the jobs be successful. Can you actually restore the data? You don't want to find this out when you have ransomware running amok through your environment. So make sure that that is going on. And then just touch base and make sure the folks who are actually doing security monitoring are paying attention to what's going on and maybe aren't asleep at the keyboard. One of the points that Mr. Holland did make in his blog post that I wanted to highlight in addition to my thoughts on this, he made the comment for that we need to pay attention to the idea of being collateral damage in an attack. So Iran may not come after my company, for example. They may not care anything about me. But if a tool that they're using, some malware or whatnot, breaks loose in ways that they didn't expect, then that can cause damage to us in some of these other organizations that aren't particularly interesting to a threat group, but their attack overflows and hits us. And Mr. Holland cites the example of Maersk and NotPetya. Maersk was not the target for NotPetya, but it got out there, it damaged them almost to the tune of $1 billion in damages. And that certainly could happen to any of us. So be sure to look at that idea in your threat model. But again, the defenses for this fall back into making sure we're doing the operational basics, that we're being attentive and responding to things and actually monitoring what needs to be done and not letting things just run rampant. Finally, I'll just add one more comment here as we see the current panic sweeping social media, the Twitters and everything in the news and all that stuff. Make sure that we keep some perspective while we're in this work. We're going to continue to have political and military strife in the world. That's just the way it is. And we're all interconnected now with the internet. We can't lose our cool every time some kind of conflict pops up. We just need to be ready for that to occur. If you feel unprepared to an incident, a security incident inside of your environment, then that's a sign that you've got some work to do. Otherwise, what we need to do, again, is stay attentive, be ready to respond, regardless of who may be attacking you, because it really doesn't matter that much who it is once we're under attack. We should detect that, respond to that, and make sure we're protecting our environments. After all, really, that's what we're paid to do in this field. So with that, we'll turn it back over to Doug.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I think the most important thing there that Jason said of anything else was, can you do a full backup restore of all your servers while your hair is on fire? You should try that sometime and just see what don't actually set your hair on fire. But, well, I don't know. Whatever you want to do. Finally, this week, apparently a U.S. model was able to earn over $500,000. I don't know if that's Australian dollars or U.S. dollars for Australia bushfire restoration and saving animals by sending people nude photos if they agreed to make donations to this site. It was all very above boards of sorts. Apparently, she was really doing this, and she was really giving all of the money to help save koalas. And in my last story, Hasbro now owns Death Row Records. So Hasbro Toys purchased Death Row Records because, well, I don't know, it's 2020, and why not? So probably pretty soon you're going to see Tupac and Biggie World down in Orlando, or maybe some action figures or something like that. East Coast, West Coast action figures in the gangsta rap scene. But all that notwithstanding, I want to thank you for joining us for this first ever episode of Security Weekly News. Be sure and check us out each and every week. Thanks to Jason Woods for his expert commentary as ever. I'm Doug White. We'll see you next time. Security Weekly News.